Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Shit Show with J-Bo. This is J-Bo. It's Sunday. It's been a fairly sweet day. I got to go to the gym. I got to make some music, listen to some music, make some executive decisions on music that I am currently trying to put together. Fairly offensive music to some people, probably for no good reason. But I might change the lyrics just because, I don't know, I might want to try to get it on radio or get something associated with it on radio. And if I use the offensive lyrics, maybe somebody shuns me, shuns my music. And that sucks. I mean, I'm 44 years old. I'm still young, but at some point I'll be too old to attempt to pursue music as a career choice. But you know, always be careful on what you wish for. I was talking to Erica Wolfe Jones today. As the wife of the infamous genius Alex Jones. And I told her where I worked, and I said, but I'm leaving myself open for other avenues, for other venues, just in case, wink, wink, you know. And she goes, I feel ya, because she's a musician, actually, and she's going to be on the Shit Show, hopefully, hopefully soon. She was supposed to do it today, but something came up with her baby. She's a mom, and she asked if she could do it next Sunday, so we'll see. I don't know her that well anymore, but I think she's on the level, so assuming she gets back with me and we get it done, you're going to hear from Mrs. Jones, Erica Wolfe Jones. Very cool lady. She was in a band called Drive It Like You Stole It. They played my house at least once when I was in Seattle. And, fuck. I'm sorry. I got some kind of Italian spice from the meatballs I ate earlier. Yeah, I've kind of cut out carbs from my diet so I can eat all kind of rich man food, you know. I can eat just proteins and powders and diet Coke and vegetables and salads. I just stay away from French fries and bread, basically. Anyway, yeah, Erica Jones is a rad chick. When I called her today, like I said, we were going to do a podcast, but it didn't happen. But she just had this great energy. And I mean, I haven't seen her since, I mean, it's probably been 12 years, I think, when I knew her in Seattle. And the way she said my name, the way she sounded when she answered the phone, just, it really felt good. It spoke to me like, wow, this is an energetic person, and I can't wait to talk to her and record it and bring it to you guys. She seems like a great person. She was in a band called Drive It Like You Stole It, and she sent me a couple demos. And when she gets on, I will go ahead and put one of those. Actually, they're not demos. They're full-on recordings. They remind me of, like, really good kind of slick punk rock, I guess. It's very well put together, really good singing. Kind of reminded me of, like, Joan Jett or something, or The Runaways. I don't know, but, like, it had an old-school feel to me. The vocals did. A lot of attitude. And then she became a yoga instructor, I guess. And she ended up marrying Alex Jones, and now she has his child. And that's wild. That's fucking crazy, because I was a Alex Jones fan long before I ever knew that she was associated with him. And I had my buddy Jimmy call me up, who I just saw on Facebook. He's at a Bernie rally, I'm sure. Well, he actually said he doesn't like Alex Jones, but, you know, Erica married the guy, and I couldn't believe it. So that was really neat. We did not get to do a podcast, but hopefully next week. Anyway, how are you guys doing? I'm doing okay. Sunday, like I said, it's been a good weekend. I'm on the tail end of 3 days, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and tomorrow, back to work, back to the weed mines, back to growing the finest medical marijuana that Maryland has ever seen. Another good thing I did today was I talked with Dave, our political man, our resident politico. What's up, Dave? Thanks for being on the show. It's always good. I thought it was kind of funny. We were both kind of out of it. Dave had, been up a little late the night before. I don't. He edits these, so I really don't know what he left in. So I'm sure it's good though. He always makes pretty good decisions. So he can tell you what he was up doing the night before. We talked about it, but I don't know if he let it in, if he kept it in, rather. So let's just get to that real quick. This is the Shit Show with J-Bo, and here's my theme song.
Welcome to the Shit Show, baby. Welcome. So how you doing, Dave?
Pretty good. It's a beautiful morning here.
Yeah, did you have a nice night last night?
You ever hear of these White Claw drinks? These White Claws?
Yes.
Yeah, they're addictive, I must say. You can drink a lot of them and you don't really realize it.
What is a White Claw?
It's a hard seltzer, and it's, I believe, made by. Well, no, I don't know who it's made by. I think it's made by like a private company. But they're making all these hard seltzers because they're like don't have any carbs in them. There's a little bit of sugar. They put 2 grams of sugar in those Sons of Bees. So sugar can hit you pretty hard.
I think I heard that it was kind of like Zima. Is that accurate?
I don't know if I ever drank a Zima. I bet Zima was probably power packed with sugar, so it's probably very similar, but these are more just like water and booze.
and you had a couple pops last night?
Had a couple pops, yeah. But I made it, I made it to the next day.
Yeah, man. Did you watch that fight?
No, I missed it. I didn't know what channel it was on.
Well, it wasn't on a channel really. It was like, I mean, it might have been, but pay-per-view,
Okay.
it was insane though. Anyway, the guy who I was hoping won, and I think it's only a matter of time before they start calling him and his crew racist, because he happened to be white, and the guy he beat was the Bronx or the Bronze Bomber, Deontay Wilder. But it was crazy, dude. Deontay Wilder got exposed. He got battered, man. I mean, he got the shit kicked out of him. And one thing I was thinking, it was a heavyweight competition, but there's a reason there are weight classes. And if you go lower in the weight class, like let's say a middleweight, whatever they happen to weigh, versus a heavyweight, you would never have them fight against each other because the bigger man has an advantage. Once you reach heavyweight, evidently, you can be as big as you want. So basically, Tyson Fury was 6'9", 274 pounds, and Deontay Wilder was like 6'6", 6'7", 230 pounds. So the smaller man got his ass beat, and I just wonder if there should be a super heavyweight division. It seemed unfair, just to, if there's going to be sizes, that's a huge disparity. You know what I'm saying?
I don't know why they do that. But if you're that big, I mean, you should get some advantage by being a little bit smaller than the 6'9" guy, and you should be quicker, We can only make so many weight classes, or we can have like 500-pound weight class and sumo wrestlers in there.
Well,
Yeah.
maybe, but I was thinking just a super heavyweight, like two, it's, I think heavyweight is 220 and up in boxing, I think. Maybe like a,
It's like,
you're above 250, I don't know, that might be a different class, but then you'd have nobody to fight, I think.
they have trouble getting good heavyweights anyway, So, geez.
Yeah, right.
At least they have for 20 years, but I don't know. I haven't paid that much attention since Tyson.
Well, this guy was named after Tyson.
Fury?
Tyson. His name is Tyson Fury. Yeah, he was named after Mike Tyson. He's a gypsy from England. Yeah, and he's a mammoth man. And he talked about that he was strengthening his jaw by eating pussy, apparently, the last few weeks. That's what he told the newspapers. So he's a real funny guy. And to watch them, mouth off at each other was crazy. I was certain Deontay Wilder got inside his head because the guy was like suicidal, super overweight, and addicted to drugs like 3 years ago. And now he's like one of the greatest heavyweights of all time. But it was a crazy match. I would advise maybe checking it out.
Yeah, maybe I will. And just to note, you can't get inside a gypsy's head. It's impossible.
No
Quite
shit.
The opposite. I'm just assuming
Apparently.
That.
He's talking about you were suicidal, man. I brought you back. You were suicidal. Got to kill yourself, you know. And the Gypsy King got a little flustered. I was like, man, that could be it. But then he just whipped that dude's ass. It was like watching a big man beat up a little boy, kind of.
Good names, though. You know, if you have a heavyweight championship, you want Wilder versus Fury. That's what you
yeah.
want.
Yeah, it's true. Hey, man, so what's going on in the weird, wild world of politics?
Well, I got three bullet points here. The first is the Democrat debate. The second is Nevada. And the third is Super Tuesday, which comes up in less than about 10 days on March 3rd.
Oh, shit. Okay.
So, yeah, so that's so we can start from the top.
Yeah, start with the first one, dude. Tell me.
Do you have any questions? Well, you had the debate, you know, and Mayor Bloomberg was on the stage for the first time. Essentially, he bought his way onto the stage, and he came out, and before he could say anything, Elizabeth Warren called him essentially a sexist, tax cheat, billionaire, scumbag. Who calls women dog-faced lesbians. Wait, check that. Horse-faced lesbians. And
it's funny, yeah.
It's kind of funny. All the Democrats sort of teamed up against Bloomberg. Bloomberg did not acquit himself very well. He kind of stumbled over his words and didn't show that he had any toughness whatsoever. He kind of proved the point everybody was making is that if he didn't have $70 billion, there's no way he'd be on the stage. He just does not have charisma. There's no reason people would get behind this guy. He's just.
I also feel like he simply didn't have the practice. You know, these people have been doing this debate stuff for quite a long time. And to step in there, I don't care who you are. It's got to be intimidating. And you got like four or five ravenous dogs who've been, you know, they've basically been like sparring with each other and fighting for a long time in Bloomberg. So you know what I mean? I think that had something to do with it as well. I think when he did get to speak, I'm getting a slightly different read than you, and yours is probably more accurate. I didn't actually watch the debate. I watched the clip. I think if you watch the debate, you probably get a lot more of what you're saying, which is he came off like a dead fish or whatever, like lame. But I just saw the times that he kind of said some things towards the end. And I thought he made some really decent points. I thought, you know, some of the things Liz Warren was saying, they sounded good as a soundbite, but they weren't exactly rooted in reality as far as non-disclosures, you know, things like that, where that is like a very common practice in business. But you're saying if you watch the whole thing, he came off legitimately really bad. And I guess that everybody would agree with you, you know?
Well, he didn't have much time to practice, but I think he did practice. They probably did like a boot camp for a few days. And my sense was that he got answers on all of those things, but from like five different consultants who all had slightly different takes and, you know, were putting different ideas in his head. And he had trouble coalescing those different takes into a cohesive message. And at one point, he gave an answer to a direct question from the moderator. He was talking for 30 seconds and making a pretty good point. I don't even remember the topic. But in the middle of his sentence, he said, well, that's not true, essentially referring to everything he had just said. And it was really odd. And then he kind of continued, like, realizing he had made a mistake.
Wow.
He kind of babbled on for a little while. And Chuck Todd, kind of finished. And Chuck Todd was like, okay, whatever that was, you know, like even Chuck Todd slammed him. It was embarrassing. I think it was really embarrassing. He'll stick around because he has the money. But look, I mean, if you're a self-respecting Democrat, and they do exist, you cannot, after, you know, bashing Trump for 3 years and bashing essentially an American oligarchy, and then go and vote for Mike Bloomberg. You can't do it. I call him the real Donald Trump, because he is what the media has been saying Donald Trump is.
I'll tell you what, though, Dave, this is just me, you know, being an older man these days, you know, and becoming crotchety and eating kippered snacks and whatnot, you know, just being an old man about things. Like, I would pick, if there was a Democrat that actually, of those five that were on stage, I would probably go Bloomberg at this point. Who would you go for?
I would probably go with Klobuchar, just because I think she would be the least damaging.
She's Klobuchar.
Sort of, you know, you put Bloomberg in power and you never know, you know, who's going to take over the country. I think Klobuchar she's been a senator for a long time.
Okay.
And so she's entrenched in that Washington kind of world. And I don't want that for a Republican, but I would want that for a Democrat, because I don't want drastic change like Bernie or Joe Biden. Sort of, he'd be fine, I guess, but I think he's just awful. And I think we'll talk a lot more about Bernie later. And Liz Warren's sort of a loose cannon, so she's scary. So I would prefer somebody like who has kind of ties to the actual Washington machinery. I don't know if I'm explaining that well, but she seems pretty standard, pretty like run of the mill. She's not going to upturn the apple cart. I think she's sharp and whatever. I'm not supporting Klobuchar, but she's who I would vote for. Yeah, out of that group, I think.
Okay. You know, it's interesting. I've been thinking about the notion of the term electability lately, and thinking about, oh, well, this person, you know, you'll see like the front runner, like they did it with Trump, where it's like, yep, Trump's kicking all our asses. Everybody's real excited, but you know what? He wouldn't beat Hillary Clinton in a head-to-head, you know? And it's like Ted Cruz, hey, I'm the one, Trump. I can beat Hillary. I know you're doing all this right now, this song and dance, but it's all bullshit. And they're doing the same thing to Bernie, like, well, Bernie's got all this grassroots support. People are excited about him, but you know what? Electability-wise, Joe Biden's the man. And I think, you know, for instance, I think it's just a way for people to make some kind of case when they clearly aren't winning, but I don't know that that's even a fucking thing. You know, I think Bernie has the best chance of beating Trump. I don't think he will, because I think once Trump sets his sights on Bernie, I just think he folds fairly easily. But you know what I mean? Do you think electability is a thing?
Well, not really. I think people vote for people, and that's kind of why Bloomberg doesn't stand a chance. He represents a list of checkoff boxes in terms of, well, is he, you know, a socialist? No. Is he probably going to do okay with the economy? Sure. Can he beat Donald Trump? Maybe. But then you look at the guy, and he's a dead fish. And what people vote for, I think, is a personality, somebody who can defend themselves and be strong, and you can envision kind of negotiating with foreign powers.
I totally agree with that. However, that's me not watching the whole debate. I think Bloomberg, when I saw him speak, if he got some gumption, if he got some nerve, like if, you know, maybe the nerves got to him, in a different situation, I thought he did have a little personality. I mean, he was telling, you know, the thing he said about Bernie's like the most well-known socialist in America, three houses and is a millionaire, whatever. Like, he said a few things that were like right fucking on.
I think he does have a personality, and that may come out, but I don't think it's a likable personality. Anybody who, you know, his New York accent makes Trump's pale in comparison, and it's it's kind of lame. And he finishes sentences with, thank you very much. And that's really obnoxious. So I think, you know, the more his personality comes out, I don't think he's, you know, I'm sure he does have a personality, but he's been just a boss for a long time. And he's probably not
right.
Very in touch with actual regular people.
You want to talk about accent, Bernie Sanders has like a serious Jewish Brooklyn accent, you know.
And it's kind of likable, though, you know. Bloomberg is more rough and just, ugh.
Okay.
And, yeah, and we've talked about, you know, accent's important, you know, just that how you sound is important.
Right.
You know, that's probably just as important as being electable, quote unquote, you know, like being taller than the person next to you on the debate stage. Or are you standing on a box, mini Mike? You know?
Did they give Mike a box?
I assume so.
Actually, I did watch some of the debate, and I was like scoping Mike Bloomberg's feet, and I believe he had to stand there without a box.
Okay. Well, you could see that where Trump is, you know, Trump wins because Trump calls him out for standing on a box before he, you know, even has a chance. And then he's like, oh, I can't stand on a box or else everybody will know and Trump will be right. So then he doesn't have a box, and then he's just way shorter than Elizabeth Warren. That's embarrassing.
The real question is, did he actually request a box, or is that just something Trump made up, which is really funny?
He probably just made it up, but it's probably there's a lot of truth to it.
No, it's like people are saying he wants a box. That's fine. You're short. You know, it's just hilarious.
There's like I said, there's truth to it, you know? He would prefer to have a box because everybody knows taller people tend to do better in debates. So, yeah, he wants a box. But Trump made it so that he couldn't have a box. And he's all short.
Yeah, yeah. Like, I honestly, it's funny because I never even would have known. I mean, on those debate stages, unless you're looking at the wide pan, you never even notice if somebody's short or tall. It's always such close-ups, you know. I never would. Like, Trump brought that into the conversation. I never would have noticed. It never would have crossed my mind, or I would have never even cared. But until, you know, Trump said something, you're like, oh, I guess he's short, huh? Interesting.
Well, in 2016, when they did the debates between Trump and Clinton, for the most part, all their cameras were like split screen, and it was just them standing at the podium, and the camera angles were kind of equalized where you couldn't tell that Trump was way taller than she was.
Right, right.
So it's a thing, you know, whether you think it is or you care if he's tall.
Yeah.
It's a subconscious kind of thing.
Yeah, it all is, yeah. We're voting for the people, man, the human forms. Not
right.
The fucking gray matter. All right, so the debate. Yeah, it was a bloodbath. I think, what else? Klobuchar took it to Pete Buttigieg pretty well. Did you enjoy that little exchange?
I thought Buttigieg came off very poorly for the most part. It seemed like the whole debate was broken up into two factions, where you sort of had the senators, including Joe Biden, teaming up against Bloomberg, and then Buttigieg was sort of on Team Bloomberg, which makes a lot of sense from a tactical, strategic standpoint from Buttigieg. Like, maybe he sees Bloomberg as the only person outside of Bernie Sanders who has a chance to win this thing, so he's going to get on that. But anyway, but I think it did come off a little bit kind of weird for him, kind of half-heartedly going against Bloomberg, but really supporting him and getting caught in the crossfire with Klobuchar specifically. And I don't know, maybe it's just I like her better than I like Pete, but I thought she did win those little standoffs. But when I talk to other people, they kind of think that Klobuchar looked really badly when she said, "What are you calling me stupid?" And I didn't think it was a great line, but I didn't think it was a horrible line either.
I thought it was, to me, that particular line, Klobuchar asking, Buttigieg if he thought she was stupid. It was a little bit cringeworthy. It was a little bit like, yeah, I hear you. It wasn't that bad, but it was strange to me. I didn't love it.
Yeah, it looked a little weak. I thought it was the end of Buttigieg's campaign. You know, I really thought he was so horrible in a lot of ways. He was worse than Mike Bloomberg. Just how he was pounding on Klobuchar for forgetting the name of the Mexican president or something. And it was just like, okay, dude, you've reiterated this point three times. You know, you got your answer. Stop. You know, it's watching the child throw punches, and it's just like, okay. That doesn't hurt, dude, you know. So I think he showed weakness.
Okay.
I thought Bernie was really strong. I really did.
Did you?
You know, you don't have to agree with somebody to admit that they're getting their point across. And I think he defended against the general argument against socialism, and which is still a very broad argument in terms of it just doesn't work. Why would we do that here? It just costs too much. And then he pretty cleanly comes out with points of, you know, like every other country does it. Why can't we do it? Yes, you know, healthcare costs as you're estimating them will go up, but if you account for what people pay in premiums, then they're about the same or cheaper because we're going to take nobody's got to pay for those drug commercials that are ubiquitous and are constantly on TV. You know, you're not going to have to advertise for drugs because that's just not how it's going to work anymore. And you're not going to have these pharmaceutical companies throwing conventions that cost $1 million every week. So it's just he's presenting a different system, obviously. While he can't necessarily put a cost figure to it, he defends the theory of it pretty well. The fact that he's authentic in doing that is enough, given the caliber of the other Democratic candidates, to get him the nomination, which takes us to Nevada.
Yes, Nevada. He won in Nevada. Is that correct?
Yeah. So I've got the results right in front of me.
Yeah, lay it on me.
There's 60% reporting. I'll go over the second round here, because I think that's more important. Sanders, 21,869 votes. Biden was in second, 10,317. Buttigieg right behind Biden at 10,240. Warren a relatively distant fourth at 6,544. So my takeaway from this is Bernie got more than twice as many votes as the person who came in second. That's a big win.
That is big. Biden came in second. What does that say about Biden? Do you think does he have a leg to stand on now to, like, go into Super Tuesday?
I think it was a strong showing for Biden, just that he beat the other candidates. He came in second, which validates him continuing through Super Tuesday. He could have easily fallen behind Buttigieg. I mean, Buttigieg won the first two races, so Biden beating Buttigieg, it shows strength for him. Yeah, he obviously would have wanted to be closer to Sanders and get more votes, but coming in second, it doesn't bode well for his overall prospects of winning the nomination, but it's relatively strong compared to the other candidates. So he'll go into South Carolina next week, and if he could still win South Carolina. So if he wins South Carolina, that's going to really it'll be Bernie and Biden. If Buttigieg doesn't show up in South Carolina, he's going to have to consider dropping out and supporting a Biden or Bloomberg, because if he doesn't want to embarrass himself on Super Tuesday, which is very possible. He wants to maintain some strength to be a potential VP candidate, be a potential presidential candidate in 4 years. I think at this point, his primary goal should be to not get shellacked across the country. So he may drop out if he doesn't perform well in South Carolina and then be like, oh, I'm on Team Bloomberg.
Oh, interesting. I hear that Tom Steyer has dumped a bunch of money into South Carolina and he might do okay there. So we're looking at Buttigieg, maybe – going on down the line. I mean, I don't know that he will do well in South Carolina. I mean, he's a gay man. You know, the black vote is hugely popular. South Carolina, maybe a lot of Christian folks, maybe not super crazy about the idea of a gay president. Maybe, do you think he gets shellacked in South Carolina?
Yeah. I think the voter in South Carolina that matters, you know, if you want to have an image of your voter in South Carolina, it's a 70-year-old black lady with wearing her church outfit because she's going to church. That's the constituency, somebody's grandmother. Yeah, so I don't see Buttigieg doing well. I mean, I find him pretty offensive in a lot of ways. where when he talks about scripture and he's like a moralist, and it's like, okay, dude, not to say you don't have a right to have a opinion on morality, but don't put it in my face. I'm offended by him in a lot of ways.
Yeah, and really, like, if you think about people's message and what they've come out with, I'm thinking about his, and it's a lot of pretty talk, but it's not even that not even that flowery talk. You know, he doesn't even talk that well, but he attempts to, be like a Barack Obama type character, but I have no fucking idea what he stands for. He seems pretty much like he goes with the wind, you know?
Yeah, he's the opposite of what we were talking about before, where you need a genuine personality to become president. I don't think he probably has a personality, but what his MO is in these debates and any interview, and what most politicians do, to be honest, is if you get a question, you compartmentalize it into which category of answer do I give that my consultant told me about. I have 5 buckets. So that question falls into bucket C of answers, and I give that robotic answer.
Oh, wow.
Does that make sense? You know, where it's just like I have a set of answers for potential questions, and so he's just – I don't think he's really thoughtful in his responses on debate stages or in the interviews. I think he's just regurgitating what his consultants have told him. He's pretty good at it, but it does not come off as sincere to me.
These people are like prize fighters, the normal person would be, you'd have somebody very smart come at them with an accusation, a question, and you're like, wow, how's he going to handle this? And then you see him just like duck and dodge and weave and say some shit. And by the end of it, you're like, well, he didn't really answer the question, but he didn't get his ass kicked. You know, like the way they can weave, just their debate skill, it's crazy. Like you're saying, it's a general answer, but it gets them out of this thing. It's very practical. You know, it gets them out of a jam, you know.
And I saw, let me pull up the popular vote right now, which is the combination of Iowa, New Hampshire, and Nevada. And if you look at those 3 states, Sanders is up by 20,000 votes, right?
Okay.
Which is pretty – and he won each state in terms of votes. Iowa, he won by 6,000. New Hampshire, he won by 4,000. Nevada, he's winning currently by 9,000. And I just think that metric is the most important metric. Not necessarily right now, but – we're going into Super Tuesday, and California and Texas are going to vote. So there's a lot of talk about, well, the Democrats are just going to take it away from Bernie. Bernie, watch out. The establishment is arrogant enough to think that they'll be able to choose in a broker convention or get Bloomberg in there just because he has the money, or Hillary Clinton will come out of the sky And so there's articles written about that, but I just don't buy it. I don't think it's possible. If in 10 days on Super Tuesday, Bernie wins California by a large margin, and he wins Texas by a large margin, which I expect to happen, if he wins those places by 5 percentage points each, his cumulative vote lead is going to go from 20,000 to 200,000. And you can't just tell however many people voted for him, it'll be over a million by that point, well over a million. You can't tell those people, you won, but you really lost. Fuck off. It's just, that can't happen. I don't think it will happen.
Especially, I feel like because of last election 4 years ago, the public is so much hipper to things, thanks in part to WikiLeaks or what are alternative news situations where Bernie got jobbed 3 or 4 years ago, evidently, but not everybody was hip to it. But now, like, people are much more informed about how things went. And so they won't take it. I think you're absolutely right. I don't see them taking it from Bernie, although there is talk of that. In a brokered convention, you hear that every time, but I've never actually seen it.
I don't think it's happened for a long time. So, I mean, we'll see. We'll see. I mean, Super Tuesday is going to be – that's going to tell us everything we need to know. I think that's when the Democrat nomination will be won. Unless Bloomberg comes in and beats Bernie in California, or if he's within 2 percentage points. But I just don't see that happening. You know, I used to live in California, and I know the California liberal to some extent. And they are smart and principled. And they're the exact people who are going to find Bloomberg offensive, because he's not really promoting their views at all. You know, these are folks who thought Obama was too conservative. So they're real, real liberals, and they don't want to elect an oligarch. So I think that Bernie will win California fairly easily by 5 points at least. And when that happens, I think it's game over, especially because he's going to – Texas, I don't think – oh, wait. Polls in Texas show – let me go to California. Damn, dude. California polls shows Sanders up by 11.5. So say there's 5 million voters in California. Well, let's say 3. If he wins by 11.5%, he will win by over 300,000 votes. So going back, how can you tell 300,000 people? You know, and that's just the margin. How can you tell them no?
Because he's not electable somehow, but we've already established in this very podcast the electability thing is kind of a myth, kind of a crock of shit.
It is, but just from a perspective of power, you know, when you're getting beaten like that by the Democrat establishment, you don't have the power to overcome that vote deficit. You have to jump on board, and I think that's what's going to happen.
Okay, so let's say that Bernie Sanders wins Super Tuesday, and I'm right with you. It seems like he was the grassroots candidate 4 years ago. It seems like he's the same today, although he's had a heart attack and he's 4 years older. I don't think him or Biden will make it through the next 2 or 3 years of life in general. So now we bring in Donald Trump. Like, Donald Trump's waiting. He's kind of decimated Biden. He's kind of decimated Warren. He's really played fairly nice with Bernie. At that point, does Trump set his guns on Bernie Sanders? And if so, I mean, is that the moment he does it, he starts? And if so, what do you think his main attack might be, just off the top of your head? Have you given any thought to that?
Not much, but I think he would hold off a while and wait for the Democrats to coalesce behind Bernie, and they'll be stubborn to do so. But it'll take a little while. You'll go into the convention, and there'll be rumors of, oh, the Democrats, Bloomberg and Buttigieg and Biden are all teaming up and combine all their votes, then they're almost as much as Bernie. I think he probably doesn't care who wins, and I think he said that because he feels he would beat any of them, but he doesn't want to necessarily go after Bernie until he wants to let the Democrats continue to beat themselves up. If the Democrat establishment is beating up Bernie Sanders, Trump doesn't need to. He can wait until they coalesce behind Bernie or whoever. Mm-hmm. In terms of attacking Bernie, I'm reminded of Trump's joke about Rand Paul. You know, he's like, I never made fun of your looks, and there's a lot of material there. So there's a lot of material there. He's old. He'll probably die. He's a crazy socialist. He's honeymooned in Russia. He's never passed a bill in his life. he might be a little bit more tactical in terms of using this as an opportunity to pull centrist Democrats into the Republican Party, or at least into voting for him. So he would try to split the Democratic Party, not necessarily by bashing Bernie, but bashing that left wing, be a broader attack on a radical left wing in the Democrat Party that has gotten so large that they're able to nominate their candidate. And that should scare everybody.
Listen, man, thanks for being on the shit show, Dave. Talk to you in 2 weeks.
All right, man, take it easy.
I see you, man.
Okay, everybody, that was Dave and I. I hope you liked it. We will have quite a few podcasts in the next couple weeks. We have podcast number 100 coming up soon. I'm not sure who's going to be on it, but I want to make it really special. So I'm going to try to think of somebody that I really like and beg them to be on my 100th episode, which is kind of cool. 100 episodes down. Wow. Anyway, I've got a couple in the can. I got my buddy Mike, his final podcast from the Appalachian Trail coming up. I just got to edit it. We divided it into two talks, and honestly, like, I'm kind of like, you know, not looking forward to editing it and putting these two together and making a cohesive conversation. I'm sure it'll be great, but it's just a lot of work, and I've been really busy lately. So sorry, Mike, but we will get to you, I promise. And then I got a guy named Real Tall from Real Tall News, and he is an Alex Jones devotee, awesome dude, and man, it's going to be great. So you guys have a great one, and we'll see you soon. Thanks for listening to The Shit Show with Jaybo. Oh, yeah, I always say talk soon. So talk soon. Bye.